This is Brock and Salk.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? All right, give me one more screen.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock Hewitt has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Salk, the third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
Well, good morning, everybody. Happy Monday. It is Brock and Salk on 710 ESPN, 710sports.com as well. It's quite the weekend, man.
I was spoiled.
Quite the weekend here,
man,
in the Northwest. A lot going on. Mariners baseball, Seahawks rookie mini camp. Lots of stuff.
It was warm. It was sunny. Saturday night was as good a game as you're going to see. Thought the energy was unbelievable. Even though they didn't win the series, Ohtani's fantastic. There was football to watch. There was all sorts of, you know, all my kids were playing. Avery scored a goal, it sounds like. You know,
it's not start exaggerating the weekend.
It sounds like Avery scored a goal. It sounds like one heck of a weekend.
she had an assist on a goal.
Yes.
She said she scored the goal. It's very similar to scoring
Mike,
a goal.
The goal would not have been scored if she didn't assist.
It's true.
Okay?
Dad, I scored a goal.
Yes, she did.
Well, kind of.
Yes, she did.
You assisted on a goal. Let's be clear. Let's start here with what the Seahawks did, Pete, or Brock, and specifically our conversation with Pete on Friday that led its way into the weekend perfectly. I just keep coming back to the themes of their offseason.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a bunch of them, right? They hunkered down. Nobody heard from them for a couple of months. We talked to Pete about that. Kind of, what were you doing in there for a few months? Quiet, blocking out the outside world. And, you know, when they came out of it, it sure seemed like they had a couple of specific goals.
Yes.
They wanted to, you know, fix the running game. They wanted to get some specific types of guys on defense. They wanted to obviously make some changes to the special teams. But it went beyond that because very clearly there was an emphasis being put on the type of, on the way people listen. On the way that coaching is received by the players on the team, which is why I think we've been saying for a while, Pete and John, we're trying to...
We gotta take the power back!
Take the power back. No more Michael Bennett, no more Richard Sherman. Guys who come in have to be humble, preaching humility.
Yep.
You have to take the power back. And I thought Pete was pretty clear about that.
No, I was very...
When we asked him on Friday.
I was very curious how we were going to go about that. So to pull the curtain back for the audience a little bit, Salk and I will plan. Right? We'll prepare, you know, a list of questions, some direction. You know, thankfully, after 8 or 9 years with Pete, you have a few, but the interview takes care of itself, right? It's going to wander around. And when you were like, are you sad? Like, you went right to that place. And I loved it. You know, I thought it was a really good, cool foray into it. I knew how he was going to answer.
He was sad. He was unsurprisingly not sad.
Well, no, it didn't. Because we've just been through so much, and I know where their head is at, and they're looking at stuff, and they can go from one moment to the next and see things a little bit differently. It can change for them. And they're battling. They're out there battling for their own sake. Yeah, it would be nice if they saw it differently. I see it differently than they saw it.
We got to take the power back.
Go away, Michael Bennett. Go away, Richard Sherman.
Are you sad? No, not sad.
You should be. I'm sad for him. I continue to say that. I'm sad for Pete. I'm sad that he treated those guys so well, and that's how they treated him back. But he has a plan.
Of course I do. Shoot, yeah, man. I'm a teacher. I got to help these guys learn. I got to do whatever it takes to get that done and get the communication right. So we're constantly tweaking. We're constantly evolving. They need to do the same. And the freshness can come from both directions. Or see you later. That's, I mean, if it's in the right place, go. You got to go. You're out of here.
We got to take the power back.
Just see you later. Go. Go to San Francisco. Go to Philadelphia.
I would have loved for you to play the song for Pete on Friday. Hey, Pete, okay, you're not sad. Then are you on the other end of it? Do you just simply want to cue the Rage Machine, take them power back? No.
See,
Mike.
I think what was most interesting about all the Pete stuff is not specifically
like
what he said. It was the tone of voice. Like, he sounded annoyed at those guys. And he's being very clear. Like, look, they can say whatever they want. I don't believe them. I don't believe that they're as mad as they say they are because I know what's in their heart. We've been through the wars and stuff.
They're
but, you know,
confused.
If they don't want to listen, they want to pretend they're reading books and this, that, and the other, they can just take it and walk right out of the door. Yes. Don't let it hit you on the way out, guys. See you later. We got some new guys in here who I really like, and we're not going to miss you at all. It's reminiscent of the Russell Wilson. I think we're going to be just fine.
Yeah, I thought he navigated that fairly well. He wasn't going to be petty. He said that two or three times, right? And you know, once again, one of my little Brockisms, when a coach repeats himself, you know, a number of times, that's the conversation that he's had, either with management, with John, with his family, of how he's just going to handle it. I'm not going to be petty. I'm not going to be petty. And he wasn't petty, but he also didn't get walked on. Right, he also made it very clear, like, hey, man, this is a two-way street. Mm-hmm. It takes me working and grinding and pushing and competing and doing everything, and it takes you guys to do the same. Like, you've got to start over. You know, I had lunch with my buddy John Kitna when I was down in Arizona last week, and he's now at Brophy Prep School down there in Arizona. And he was chatting. He said, gosh, I've just been doing a bunch of reading. And Nick Saban is so good at this. He calls it his process. But the essence of it is every year you start over. Every year it has to be new and fresh. And it's not just like a mantra to say that. It has to be. It has to be in everything that you do. You know, you've got to kind of continue to reinvent. Even if it's the same things you're saying, it's the same plays you're running, you got to make it new as a coach, as a player, and the great ones do.
Yeah.
You know, Peyton Manning chomping on his gum, taking notes. He's run dice right, slant blunt, check with me 6 million times. But that first practice, that first mini camp that I was at with him, it was as if he was hearing it the first time. You know, it really was. He was listening. He was digging into details. And it was just kind of his mindset that it doesn't matter what's done in the past. It's got to start anew every year.
Yeah, some of the text messages coming in, 710-710, powered by Coors Light. Come on, guys, give me a Ron Fairley. See you later. I don't know if he was saying it quite like that, but he was definitely making it clear. You guys are bashing them like they were the worst. Well, I don't know that we're bashing Michael Bennett or Richard Sherman so much as pointing out the fact that Pete Carroll's ready to move on and made it very clear that while those guys may have their own version of the story, that once you stop wanting to buy in, maybe I've told the story two or three times, maybe you've heard this one before, Michael or Richard, but guess what? There's always something new you can take from it, and if you are no longer in the business of trying to learn, then you're going to have to be in the business of playing somewhere else.
Yes,
and I thought that message was delivered loud and clear. I really like talking to Pete actually on Friday.
I do.
It gave me a really calm sense that he is refocused. He is determined. He's got a little anger about the way things went in the past, but he's also ready to move on and kind of has a specific plan for the future. So I came away probably feeling even better about where they're going than beforehand.
Yeah, in many ways, yes. Now, I would say to that texter, and I know I've dialogued with Ray Roberts about this and others, and G. Scott, too. You know, Mike, there's some responsibility that falls on the feet of Pete. This wasn't just those players that totally disengaged. Anytime it's a two-way street, you know, there is some responsibility of Pete, you know, giving, you know, so much leeway and so much freedom that those guys took advantage of at times. But also, hey, they weren't engaged. What could you have done more to continue to engage those guys? You know, and Richard didn't stop competing on the field. I mean, he still was out there for those seven games competing his butt off on the field.
But he stopped protecting the team and stopped being a part of what they were trying to do. And, you know, you kind of add it all together, changing coordinators, changing out some of the players. And I thought Pete had an interesting phrase to describe what it was they needed.
So we really have at least touched into all of the crucial areas that could cause a bit of an adjustment. And I think we needed an infusion of new. I think we just needed to be new and fresh to go ahead and make the turn. But it isn't philosophically changing. It's really just changing kind of the insides of
an infusion of new. Now that they've made their turn, it's time for an infusion of new. Lydia, you're dancing over there. Why is that
a lyric to a song?
Yeah, sure,
somewhere,
why not?
It should
infusion
be.
Of new. I said it sounds like a Gwyneth Paltrow relationship status.
It also could be a band.
Yep.
Like sort of like more of a band than a song. Like, oh, that's by Infusion of New.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. I love them. I saw them at Sasquatch.
And I know an hour from now we'll get to some of what I saw Friday. It was fun going out there, right? We were out there in the morning.
What does that mean? What does the Infusion of New mean?
Oh, it's all new people. It's new.
Because I kind of took some of it as new energy.
That's right. And new energy that's created by new young faces that they've got to prove themselves, that have got to work their butts off. You know, we had a baseball game Saturday and took the family Friday night to the game. I had a couple extra bobbleheads. And you and I at times.
Hans Segel
bobbleheads.
Best bobblehead ever.
You and I sometimes disagree on incentivizing and what that looks like globally or big picture and economy or whatever. But there is no doubt. With 8, 9-year-olds, I incentivized our baseball game. I said, hey, I'd really love to. I said to the skip, I said, would you mind if we kind of give this away during the game to the guy that really talked the best baseball?
Oh.
Let's grow these kids, 8-9-year-olds, talk the game out there.
Chatter?
Hey, runner, no, runner on first, plays, you know, one out, plays a second. Just
I bet you 9 on out.
Yeah, just to be kind of alert and alive and focused, Mike. And I tell you what, 9 guys chirping the entire game.
D-double-O-D-Y-E, good eye, good eye.
7-10, time for Need to Know.
Need to Know, the voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
Well, the Mariners had a heck of a game on Saturday night, but the Angels did take 2 of 3 over the weekend, thanks in large part to, unfortunately, a dominant performance from Shohei Ohtani yesterday. I was in the building, and he was spectacular. Look, Saturday was really fun. It was one of the best games that I can remember. But as usual, those types of wins and those types of losses on the other side do not mean as much as you think. So forget about the, see, this team has showed me something. They can't. They won a game like this, and now they're a playoff team. Just as much as you should forget about after the A's loss when the Paxton threw 16 strikeouts the other day, saying, oh, see, they can't win a game like this, so they can't be a playoff team. Playoff team wins game. Forget it. Just forget it. They're just one game. And unfortunately, in baseball, you just can't take that much out of one game. Here's the deal. The Mariners have shown that they're just not ready to hang with the best teams in baseball right now. You know, they lost 3 out of 4 to the Astros. They lost 2 out of 3 at home again to the Angels. Right now, put some sort of a game behind, because I believe what they do against the Angels specifically will end up determining how this season goes.
7-2-2 now in their 11 series. And unfortunately, those two losses that Mike just pointed to were both in the division to two very good teams. We're almost at the quarter pole, by the way. We're almost somehow, some way at the quarter pole of the Major League season. In fact, after this road trip, the Mariners will be there. And it sure feels like more than ever, there's haves and there's have-nots. Right, there's haves in baseball, some really elite teams at the top, and the Angels are a lot better than they've been with Ohtani, and Mike Trout's still the best player, and Pujols looks a little bit healthier, and that lineup is elongated. We know what Houston is. We're going to get to see Toronto, you know, eventually New York. It just feels like some haves and have-nots in unique ways, and you're right in between right now. You're not a have-not. There's no doubt about that. 7-2-2, you are not a have-not. But there's going to be a step up necessary to get to some of those halves, and we'll get another good test set and good luck with the series beginning in Toronto tomorrow.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Seahawks held their rookie minicamp this weekend. Who stole the headlines? In many ways, it was the new punter, fifth-round pick Michael Dixon, who was remarkable. Kicking 50-yard drop kicks, doing things with the football, punting it nobody had ever seen before. I'm excited about that. Call whatever you want. I think it's good to have players that are the best at something, units that are the best at something. And if they end up being an elite punting unit and they end up having a, maybe it's an elite linebacker unit. I don't know what it's going to be for this team, but I think great teams end up having one group of elite athletes, and I would like to see the Seahawks find that again ever since the secondary has been sort of broken apart.
Yeah, I'll give you a bunch of takeaways here in about 45 minutes. I went out there and watched on Friday, but I guess my headline is this. That if you're counting on rookies to be significant starters and be the difference maker, you're going to be counting on a very average season in the NFL. It's going to take the best players on this team to have some of their best seasons, and then some nice roles cut out for Will Disley, for Michael Dixon, for Shaquem Griffin, for Rasheem Green, for the other rookies involved there, and Rashad Penny. Now, he may be the outlier in all of that. And running backs can be, and we have seen it in this league. Awfully hard to tell in a rookie minicamp practice in that setting. But takeaways coming your way in 45 minutes.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, Seahawks released Pro Bowl defensive end Cliff Averill on Friday with a designation of failed physical. He did play parts of 5 seasons in Seattle. Move frees up $7 million of cap room that could potentially go to Dwayne Brown. Kudos to Cliff Averill on a tremendous career here in Seattle.
That was some of the news that came out Friday after Pete. The other end of that is Pete acknowledged on Sunday that Earl Thomas has yet to take part in any of these voluntary workouts. That is Earl's judging voluntary, may be different than his voluntary, and it may look like he'll be here 3 of the 180 days. And let me add one more little side note, what you need to know, Saul. The 05 ECNL Crossfire team, yeah, 3-time state champs. Yesterday down at Starfire, it was awesome playing in the big stadium. Macy was, you know, an absolute blast with the scoreboard running, and everything went to overtime, and found a way to
OT.
Get it done. What a great game. Seattle United, very good fall. Just went the way of Crossfire yesterday for the third.
This is the team Macy's. Is she goalie on this team?
She was a goalie last year.
Now she's moved up into
She was like, you're Avery. She had a chance to have an assist late in the game, which was fun. And yeah, Cam was a star. It was just a blast.
I scored a goal. I mean, you
don't diminish her dreams.
You assisted on a goal.
That's just as good.
Me and Violet scored a goal together.
Would the goal have happened without Avery's assistance?
No, then she nailed it.
So she's right.
Let's talk to the professor.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Saul.
If you want to take care of him now. And the price is only going to go up.
Brought to you by Divorce Lawyers from N.com.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to
totally break everything down.
Plus, a wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
Yeah, I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Saul.
Good morning, John. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Great. It was a great weekend. What stood out to you from rookie minicamp this weekend?
I'd say Alex Magoo.
Oh, the quarterback. I mean, really seventh-round quarterback. Can throw from any angle.
Only quarterback that wasn't invited to the combine. I mean, strong arm, moves well, had very creative with the way he gets the ball. I mean, there was at least two plays where he kind of rolls around to the left and then just kind of flips the ball for a touchdown. He was very accurate with his throwing. I mean, he looked really good.
He did. He had good velocity, right, John? You see some of these guys, and in fact, Austin Davis just doesn't have a real fastball, and we'll get to see that at their first public OTA. I mean, he could throw with a little bit of steam. So what does this mean? Does he have a legit shot, you think, to compete to be the backup?
I think he can. I mean, very much like Trevon Boykin. I mean, once you saw Trevon Boykin, you didn't necessarily see it in the mini camp, but once you saw him at training camp, you could see by about a week or two, three weeks, he was going to take that job. I think in the same vein where you can see Magoo. Now, again, where his adjustment is going to be going into more of a conventional type of offense, you know, working out of the pocket. That's the thing that he has to learn. And if he picks that up, I think he has a great chance to make the team. So where I thought he would be, you know, the third quarterback cut on the practice squad, he has a legitimate shot to make the team.
How about the punter, Michael Dixon, fifth-round pick. They traded up for him. I'm told he was hitting 50-yard dropkick field goals.
Yeah. He was a little bit wide on a couple of them, but he was doing a lot of that. I mean, this guy has an incredible ability to kick the football. I mean, they were creating drills based on his ability to have the high hang time. I mean, what they would do, like, for example, on Saturday, and I know they did it with the defense and offensive linemen on Friday, is that, you know, they would put each guy in a position competitively, you know, to try to see if they could catch his punts. And they all had a hard time doing it. So you had tight ends and linebackers diving and falling, but his ball goes up and it has a little twist to it and it kind of curves and then comes straight down flat and is really hard to catch. I mean, this is one punter, and he gets 60-yard range on some of his punts, where what I think they're going to see is that he's going to create turnovers with his ability to punt.
Now, I know the afternoon show at 4 doesn't let you talk kickers and punters, right?
Wyman, we'll talk about it all morning.
Yeah, about it all the time. Wyman's the only one. He's outnumbered 2-1.
Yeah, he doesn't really like it. Who was the first guy, do you remember, John, as you covered the NFL, that you watched either kick the ball as a kicker or as a punter, that you were like, whoa, that looks and sounds a lot different than what I've been used to or I've seen over the years. Can you remember back to a couple of those first real impressions?
Yeah, I remember Colquitt when he came into the Steelers. He just had a different style because, I mean, and again, he had a great kicking ability. You saw that. I mean, even Sebastian Janikowski, when he came into the league with a powerful leg back in 2000, I mean, that was so noticeable. I think when you start seeing some of the Australian punters, like down in San Diego, there's a difference there because they're putting a little bit of a twist to the ball and all that. And then Johnny Hecker here locally. I mean, again, when he came into the league and got in with the Rams, I mean, he had a power to his kicks.
What do you make of sort of the two biggest names of their draft picks? That would obviously be Rashad Penny and then Shaquem Griffin. I know he wasn't picked the highest, but those two names probably stand out. What kind of camp did they each have?
I think very good. I mean, very impressed with Penny, particularly where they had him catching the ball. He's had such a natural ability to get the ball in his hands and move. I mean, that was really strong. And you can see he's very fluid. I mean, you can see why they had him as the second best running back in the draft and the guy that they took in the first round. He looks really strong. And then what you see from Griffin is just his ability to move and run and do that, a very natural ability. You saw that on the field last year when he was in college and you're able to see it. And again, I think they got him at the right spot at weak side linebacker. And what you wonder, and I think Pete addressed this a little bit yesterday, that you know, maybe there are some other things they can do with him. Maybe they can put him in some nickel as a safety or something of that nature. But he looked very fluid.
You know, the first time I think a bunch of us saw Russell in person and then, you know, kind of watched the minicam, I was like, wow, he is amazing. Because he's about Salk's height, right? I mean, he's about 5'10", and he goes out there and just does unbelievable things. When you saw Shaquem for the first time in person practicing out there and doing so without that hand, was there any, like, man, that is just truly remarkable? Or did you just kind of see it disappearing and he's a football player?
No, I think that's the best part, because you don't notice it. You just notice he's a football player and a very fast football player. So I think he fits in so well, and that's going to be the fun part. And you can see on special teams, he's going to be, you know, probably at least one of the better ones are going to be the ones that's going to be used the most. And so I think that you now just kind of put him in the category of being a football player, and maybe as time goes on, the chance to be a very good football player.
So Earl Thomas is not going to report to voluntary workouts, as according to Pete Carroll over the weekend. And again, these are just voluntary, so there's no big deal, right?
No, I mean, again, it's, is it, again, you know, there's contract issues that are involved there. So
but it's just voluntary, right?
It's voluntary.
So it doesn't matter.
Well, Michael Bennett wasn't there last year.
Right. Brett
Favre wasn't there last
year. And all I heard was that it was voluntary and it didn't matter.
Yeah, it's voluntary.
Okay.
It's nice to be
there. Let me just ask you clearly.
Does it
matter whether Earl Thomas is there?
Right now, no.
Okay.
Not right now. But I was doing some math. I told Coach
Carroll. That's not true, John. You know it.
What's that?
You know that's not true.
Why is it not true?
Because of course it matters.
What matters to all the small? I mean, you know, I think he knows the defense. I mean, I know there may be some adjustments in the defense, but I think he can pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you can see there's a contract issue going on and mm-hmm. kind of a little bit of a holdout. And we'll see if it goes into training camp. That's where it becomes serious. And now if he misses the mini camp, then it's a different story, because that's mandatory. That's not voluntary.
What do you think of the new Monday Night Football booth, John? Joe Tessitore, Witten, Booger McFarlane.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. I mean, Booger is very controversial. He'll say a lot of different things, and yep. So I think that could be good. I think Jason's going to be a very smart guy. Joe's a very professional broadcaster. You know him so well.
Yep.
Do you like it?
I do. It is outside the box a little bit. I mean, you got two guys that have never done it before on its biggest stage, kind of the biggest entity at ESPN. So taking a risk, they certainly are.
We've got a voluntary wild card for you, John.
Okay.
Time now for the wild card.
What wild card?
Mr. Professor Clayton?
Yes.
Which would be more dangerous to come across in the wild, a wild boar or a pack of coyotes?
I'd say the pack of coyotes, because you're outnumbered. I mean, you got now, I don't know how many are going to be in the pack, but what, you got 5, 6 that are going to be coming after you? And if they haven't eaten, you know, they may be coming after you. I mean, the boar is going to be tough, but again, all he's going to do is just kind of go right through you. So it's almost like the difference of having 3 pass rushers coming at a quarterback,
right,
and I'm the quarterback, as opposed to one guy trying to do a bull rush, which
right.
is the boar. So
yeah,
you have a better chance to avoid the boar than you do the coyotes, because you're outnumbered.
I know you never hunted.
Makes perfect
sense. You don't have the time to do so now either, John. But back in the day, I don't know, 20, 25 years ago, if we were hanging out and said,
yeah,
hey, let's do this hunting thing. One off season, let's learn to go out and hunt. Is there anything that you would enjoy hunting for?
I don't know. I mean, you hate to shoot a deer, because I mean they're so cute,
yep,
right?
True.
It just it does
Bambi.
Yeah, Bambi. It's like, yeah, you don't want to do that. And you know, if you're going against a bear, maybe that's going to be formidable. But the bear can come back and get you more than.
I mean,
you
I had a
down.
Friend of mine that went wild boar hunting in Texas with only dogs and knives.
Yeah, dude.
Yes. Only dogs,
John. Thank you.
And knives.
There was a girl that I liked in college, and she was telling me about her ex boyfriend or something. She's like, oh yeah, he was out this weekend, and oh, we lost John. She's like, oh, he was out there, and he killed. He's basically saying that he killed a wild boar, but
okay,
she sort of made it sound like he had just like hunted a pig.
Uh-huh.
Oh, he was out pig hunting. I was like, oh, that's real tough. You like walk up behind some pig sitting there in a pen, and you pull the trigger. And she's like, no, he goes out into the wilderness with just a knife. I was like,
right.
Oh, this has gone awry. This hasn't worked at all.
I don't know if I could do that, but bless his heart. Bless his heart.
You don't want to be with that guy. He's out there rolling around with a pig in the wilderness. That sounds terrible. All right. Let's see. You can listen to the show here on the 710 Sports app. Don't forget, it's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. We will have a lot more football to come today. Brock's observations from rookie minicamp. Some real good ones coming up at 8 o'clock. But up next, Brock, jealousy, envy. It's ugly, but it's real. And next on Brock and Salk.
And the right-hander's 2-2 to Ohtani, swinging a fly ball to left field and deep, going back to the ball into the corner. Gamble reaches out, can't get to it. It's on the track, rolls to the wall. Upton will score. Around to third goes Pujols. In at second, Ohtani with an RBI double. And the Angels now lead it 3-0.
That was Friday night. Ohtani doing it with the bat, and then yesterday he did it with the arm. Kid's good, man. Kid's really, 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 really good. I was there yesterday, Brock, and he, good luck. He's throwing 98, painting it on the black, and then throwing a 75 to 77 mile an hour curveball. He's got a slider. He's got a ridiculous split finger. Like, good luck. He's got all four pitches. He's got command of all four, and he's got a 20 mile an hour difference between the curveball and the fastball.
Is that good?
Yeah, it's pretty good. It was funny. I was commenting on it to Heather, and she's like, oh, 77, is that fast for a curveball? I was like, no, it's actually slow. It's the difference between, it's the 20 mile an hour difference between that and the fastball. That's so crazy. I mean, he is the
real
deal.
So you felt yourself jealous. So I was there Friday night, and I was there for that little double down the left field line. He smoked one, you know, just an absolute laser beam to right center as well for his first hit. And, you know, you see him in the batter's box, and he's very confident.
He's huge.
He is.
He
now,
looks big.
Now, the old-timer next to me asked me questions. Yeah. Old-timer next to me said,
it's a
good
boy.
Crowd, what, 40-some thousand Friday night for Sean Siegel night? And the guy says to me, why are they booing him?
No.
It's like, oh, buddy. You know, well, first of all, unfortunately, you don't listen to the show 710.
Right, thanks.
there's a reason. I said, because he's really good, and it's actually a compliment to get booed. You know, if you're a very talented player, the boos are going to come your way. And also because he left us at the altar, because I think many of us in this town and certainly in the organization felt like he was going to be donning a Mariner uniform and adding so much juice to this team this
season.
He's
got every bit of that juice and more. I mean, just being there, yes, this stuff is just, it's insane. And the only hope, remember, he's 23. We're not talking about a fully formed product either. He's only 23 years old. So to come into baseball with that kind of stuff and to hit the way he has so far at age 23, I think is remarkable. Beyond all of that, the only hope, because he's cheap and he's controllable for the next 6 years, is that Mike Socia will find a way to screw it up. Which, by the way, is a legitimate possibility.
That's a pretty good bet.
Mike Socia stinks. That guy's a bad manager, and I cannot believe he has had a job as long as he had. That guy won a World Series in 2002 and has been living off that World Series now for 16 years. I know he won a couple as a player, but as a manager, he won a World Series in 2002 thanks to a roided-out Troy Gloss and John Lackey coming up big and K-Rod showing up at the end of that year. He won a World Series in 02.
He's won a lot.
By the way,
Mikey's
the bullpen he rolled out there in 02 was ridiculous. He just won every game because he only had to play six innings.
Anywho.
Scott Shields was filthy. Dan Weber was filthy at that point and totally insane.
Anywho.
K-Rod and then Percival. They were ridiculous, not to mention Schoenweiss in the pen because he had too many pitches.
I don't know.
Anybody could have won with that team.
He was good enough to be a part of getting this guy that Scott Service was talking
please.
About after the
He's
game.
He's good enough to have had his organization draft Mike Trout, which made Shohei Ohtani want to go play there. Spare me saying that Mike Socia had anything to do with
service.
This guy.
About what I expected. You know, the fastballs, you know, it's got velocity. I thought there were certain stretches he was commanding it better than others. The secondary pitches are real. You know, the curveball and the slider, the split finger, they all have depth. They're hard. You know, he's very poised. But, you know, he gave us chances. You know, he made a few mistakes that, you know, we didn't turn into hits or big hits at all. So, you know, I got to credit him. He got the job done today.
And it left me, Mike, not in envy. Even Friday night.
I was curious what people think.
Yeah,
of
I wasn't
this,
envy. I was honestly in a spot both Friday night and yesterday. I can only imagine. I'm not in envy. I can only imagine. I mean, it was that close. It was that just right there, seemingly. It was you and the Angel. I mean, and to imagine what it would be for this team who's 19-14, by the way, who's 7-2-2 in series, who's played Saturday night is thrilling and unbelievable a game the Mariners did, and coming back and just so many of these pieces. I honestly watching him Friday and then pitching yesterday was like, man, can you imagine? He's your one, Paxton's your two, Felix is a three, Leek's a four, Marco's a five. Like, that's legit.
Yeah.
Like, that would be a totally legit deal. And with what you just said, for the next 5-6 years, a controllable, young, cheap ace instead of your team.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunately we're going to be competing against now.
Text message, Socia owns the Mariners. He does? I mean, maybe his team has, but Mike Socia's a bad manager, man. I'll say this over and over again. I mean, baseball is littered with players who can't stand him, and they're all, by the way, guys who have played for him and just think he's the biggest pain. And then after that, you just have the decision-making, which I think is often suspect. Totally blew the 04 ALDS. There have been others along the way as well. That's how far you have to go back on Mike Socha things. It's been that long. I'm watching that game Saturday night, and I think he absolutely helped cost the Angels that game. Mm. Kudos to the Mariners. It was a great game, man. Back and forth, and huge hit from Kyle Seager. Huge hit from Zunino. Obviously, that home run. I mean, but Healy came up with a couple big ones. Gamble comes up with a big hit. Some decent baser. I mean, like, there's a bunch of different things that ended up winning them that game. But at the end of it, you end up with a man on second, one out, and for whatever reason, tied in the bottom of the 11th, he doesn't walk Healy to set up a double play. Like, what am I missing? Mm. Which would you rather do? Wouldn't you want to set up a double play with Mike Zunino? It's not like the run matters, right?
Yeah.
And the runner on first means literally nothing. Why wouldn't
you want to pitch to Healy or Zunino and set up a double play?
I'd rather pitch to Mike Zunino, who I don't think...
It was 4 hours and 19 minutes. They were ready to go home. Okay, let's just go.
And he's ready. Yeah, the right-hander's 0-1 to Healy. Swinging a ground ball down the third baseline. Fair. Gets up down the left field line. Seager rounding third, waving his hand. He will score. The Mariners win it. They win it 9-8 on a walk-off RBI double by Ryan Healy.
Cue the shot of Mike Socha sleeping in the dugout.
This is 5 minutes of anti-Socha. I thought we were talking Shohei. You really don't like Socha.
No, don't like him at all. I don't like Shohei either.
Yeah.
And I'm a little mad that they didn't plunk him on Friday night, too. I was hoping Mike Leake would just drill that guy right in the middle of the back. Don't you leave us at the altar, plink. Let's go.
I was thinking there would be a chance.
I kind of thought there was, too. I was a little bummed out not to see it. So, was it a good weekend or a bad weekend? How do you take it?
Yeah, it's a bad weekend. You don't win the series. I didn't think you were competitive Friday night. You couldn't hit him, and you couldn't hit Ohtani yesterday. And you had a lot of 0-0-0-0s, you know, through the first 5-6 innings of all of these games before you erupted against bullpens, which you've done all year. So, yeah, to try to capitalize on a home series. And I think you're right. This is a team that's going to be right there all season long. Mm. And when you play them at home in your park in front of 40,000, basically, each and every night, you would sure just love to have found a way to win that series. But I will say this. Saturday night was real. If Ohtani's stuff, right, and his breaking stuff was real, Saturday night, just the vibe of that team, not that it carried over into Sunday.
Well, I was thinking about that.
Yeah, not that it carried over into Sunday. And heck, it didn't even carry over into the 9th, 10th, or 11th because that was the 8th inning.
It's true.
But just to see how much, I don't know. It's refreshing for me, I think, for Mariners fans. Certainly there was great response, and a lot of folks felt the same way, just to see helmets thrown, just to see chest bumps, just to see, you know, words sworn, just to see guys like
D. Gordon jumping over the railing again. And
so,
all of that.
So invested in so
Here's
into
what I want to know. If good teams don't lose games like they did to the A's the other night, and playoff teams always win games like they did on Saturday, what are the Mariners?
Mm.
This creates a great paradox for the judge baseball based on one game people.
Right.
What is Jim? I got to hear from Jim Moore later today.
Yep.
I want to know how Jim puts all of this together because Jim is a prisoner of whatever happened 30 seconds earlier.
Right.
It's like a dog that immediately forgets anything that's ever happened in the past. Like if it didn't happen in the last 30 seconds or in Jim's case, maybe 24 hours, it doesn't mean anything at all. So I'm kind of curious to know, are the Mariners going to the playoffs based on Saturday, or are they going to immediately fail because of what happened on, what was it, Wednesday?
Yeah, you know what the answer is. It's always the next day's starting pitcher. And unfortunately, on Sunday, the next day's starting pitcher was a guy by the name of Shohei Ohtani, who we talked a lot about for an entire winter. And your guy was Felix, who didn't have his A game, who battled, who did all he could.
Got that great standing O from the crowd, though, on the way out the door.
Sure did.
That was awesome. I love the way the guy had a mediocre, you know, start in 5 2/3 and left of that standing O on the way out. Woohoo! Sorry.
You gotta support your guys, Mike.
Gotta support your guys. I mean, not the guy who'd hit the game-winning hit the night before.
Right.
He doesn't get any sort of ovation when he gets announced.
Yeah.
But definitely Felix after a mediocre loss. That's much more worthy of a
Saturday night was
ovation.
Fun. I'll just land on that.
Saturday night was awesome.
Man, was
I was so
fun.
Fired up to go to the game Sunday after that.
Yep. And then Shohei Ohtani.
Shohei Ohtani and a crowd that seemed to know less than nothing about baseball. All right. Coors Light's Blue 42 is coming up. It's next on Brock and Salt.
42.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Song.
Boo 42. Boo 42.
All right, Coors Light's Blue 42. All I want to do now is talk about Ichiro. I want to talk about what he was doing Saturday night. Parting with the team afterwards on the field. Can we come back to this today?
Full uniform.
Not just full uniform. Batting gloves and wristbands. Why is he wearing batting gloves?
He was back there taking some PP, bro. He was in the cage. Edgar was working on some stuff with him in the cage.
Does that make him like...
innings.
Ichiro, stop using our stuff. Stop hitting on the machine. The game's going on, man. Like, you can't keep using these during the game. All right, question number one. Three good football questions for Brock. We do this every day. If you guys haven't seen that, by the way, just see if you can watch the celebration on Saturday night after the Mariners had the walk-off win. There's Ichiro sprinting out there, I mean, which is fine.
When Kevin Mather and Stanton are wearing uniforms and batting gloves and they do the same as Stoner... President CEO.
Why is Ichiro wearing batting gloves and wristbands post-game? All right. Question number one. From a physical standpoint, who stood out at rookie minicamp?
I'm going to do something you won't do. I'm going to hand you my phone.
Oh, I know who it is. It's Will Disick.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay, I want you to slide that way. Here, no, just look there and just slowly slide to the right. And I think you may change your answer because this guy... came in, and Coach Carroll was talking about a little bit yesterday. As Carroll went through all the draft picks and just said, this kid comes in with an understanding of how
to play. I looked at this exact same picture.
Really?
I know you're going to go to Rasheem Green.
I am going to go to Rasheem
Green. I went to Will Disley based on how wide he was.
Will Disley, very wide. Billy Bozeman, very strong. But Rasheem Green, as far as just like an NFL body and an NFL guy, an NFL movement. And when you run 4.7 at 280 pounds, that is just going to stand out.
Worried for him, though. He looks like he's 40.
Huh? Kind of, but that picture, I don't know if he'd shaved down the stash a little bit. He didn't look quite as old, but he looked like a football player. He looked like a guy that's going to fit in right away, and Coach Carroll said as much. You get in this rookie minicamp, but really what you want to see is you kind of overload them with information and who can still play fast. And then who can play fast because of the background of what they come to school with. You know, Jaron Reed was able to do that from Alabama. Rasheem Green coached fairly well. Clancy Pendergast is D coordinator there at USC. Came from where? A lot of different schools, but also a longtime NFL guy with NFL principles and NFL teaching. So not only did the build fit, I don't think there was any doubt, 94 looked the part, and he's got to play the part come this fall.
All right, question number two. Why is it that Coach Carroll needs these running backs to be able to play all three downs? We talked about that in general. So that's the thing that they have in common between Rashad Penny and Chris Carson and C.J. Procise, et cetera.
Because they were horrendous a season ago at doing it. They've been horrendous the last few years at doing that. Marshawn was the last guy that could do it. That could pass block, that could catch, that could run on early downs. And you become so predictable that when this guy is in the game and Eddie Lacy, guess what he's going to do? He can't catch. So he's going to try to just run this play here. And then, you know, McKissick comes in the game and guess what he's going to do? He's going to catch. Do you remember the number Trevon Boykin talked to us about last year? It was 115. It's either 115 or 125. That was the target receptions for the running backs. They got 79. And the only reason they had 79 was McKissick as a receiver had 37 of those. You could probably pare that down to 50. They fell so short in that area. Yeah, and Rashad Penny's ability to catch stood out to Coach Carroll.
He caught the ball beautifully, really. He can do whatever we need to do in the throwing game. Shotty did a nice job of mixing some stuff in so that we could see him doing different route concepts. And so he had a real good variety of things that we looked at him in and out of the backfield. And with a couple exceptions, he did a really good job. So that's a real good sign. We're going to work real hard with his pass protection, make sure that he's up to speed there. And we'd like to see if we can make him available to us on all three downs. Kind of like we use Chris.
Thomas Rawls just couldn't catch. I mean, bless his heart. That was not his deal. And Eddie Lacy just could not do that. And Chris DeMichael could not do that consistently. And when you just have that kind of liability throughout, Mike, it really puts and pigeonholes coordinator. And it, as I said earlier, it just makes you way too predictable to have three backs that can be three down guys and catch it out of the backfield. Big time advantage. Take some of the burden off your O-line as well.
See any pictures of Chris Carson over the weekend that came out?
Jacked.
Dude.
Jacked.
He's ready to go.
Yeah.
He's taking the job
seriously. You know, it's funny what happens when a first round. It was happening before. It wasn't like he ramped it up after the draft. Like, I'm sure he was told they're going to go after a running back, and to do so in the first round, he's going to come in to eat. There's no doubt about it.
All right, question number three. What do you make of what they're doing here with the Monday Night Football broadcast? So Joe Tessitore will now be the play-by-play guy. They add Jason Witten straight off the field to be the color analyst. And they're also going to add Booger McFarland as the, quote, field analyst. Is that the Tony Siragusa role?
Yeah. And a little bit of Tom Luganville. That's what Luganville does on their crew, right? He provides a lot of analysis. It was fun when Tom did that in the spring game at Clemson with us. And this is taking a risk. And Clayton's right. Booger's a guy that says whatever. And I think there's a feeling of, hey, we need our Charles Barkley. Barkley just doesn't care who he offends. He doesn't care what he says. You know, he's filterless and thinking that maybe Booger can provide some of that opportunity. Joe is an absolute pro. He is a friend. I'm very biased in that way. This is the most important opportunity in his lifetime. He's excited for it. And then Jason Witten is a just tremendous human being with lots of respect around the league. So kind of put all those things together and it makes sense. You know, for your biggest entity, again, coming off John Gruden and what he was the last 10 years, those are some awfully big shoes to fill and an awfully big risk to take with such an important entity.
I was hoping to get you to tell a story here. It's today's Coors Light's Blue 42. Did you see, you remember Will Blackman, who was here a few years ago
yeah.
As a cornerback? Nice dude from BC. And did you see his tweet over the weekend? So he said, "Dear rookies, want to save money? Buy cubic zirconia earrings. You're in the NFL. No one will ever notice or question you."
Yep.
And he's got a little picture of a diamond and a cubic zirconia earring next to each other, basically. Like, look, it's the same thing. He's his point, and he's got a picture of his own that he's holding up. And he's just like, look, everyone already thinks you're rich because you made the money. You don't need to go blow it all on diamonds.
True.
I was thinking about some of those stories you told me from the beginning of some of those rookie symposiums.
Oh, man. Guys buying houses for parents and cars and send me the bills and I'll pay for it. I'm like, oh, no. Don't go down that road. And you know what? 20 years ago, they had someone in the building that tried to help, but now they have so many of these teams do so many resources. And Mo Kelly, who works in that building, is such a, I think, a confidant and friend and a guy that really is trying to help those guys understand that. And, you know, maybe he should hand out cubic zirconia and just hand those to the guys.
Yeah, just here you go. Yeah. It's cheap. Just
put the card away, put the cash away. And
I like Will Blackman. It's too bad he didn't make it here. He's a really good dude.
Well, they talked about
it,
by the way. I think he was either in for a visit or they were.
Again this year?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah, he's a free agent. I don't think he shut the door on football still. And there were some overtures, you know, depending on how things shake out and what it looks like, that door may be open, you know, once again come training camp time. We'll see.
Really interesting guy.
He was.
So, all right. That's today's Coors Light's Blue 42. Let's go a little bit more in depth. You guys missed minicamp. They're not allowed to be out there. It's only a couple of members of the media who are. Brock was one of them. He's got a whole bunch of takeaways. You guys are going to want to hear these to get ready for the season next. I'm Brock and Salk.